This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Syngenta, delivering better food for a better world through outstanding crop solutions.
We are back in San Antonio for the Commodity Classic, and have we got an aggressive agenda for this morning. We're going to be talking NAS and marketing, and then we're going to have one of the most unique free-for-alls we've ever had, right here from Commodity Classic.
Live from San Antonio via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we'll talk with Dan Huber from the Huber Report and Lance Honig from USDA's NAS. And then in our Friday free-for-all, panelists Jim Sutter, Tim Recker, and Jim Mintert. And right after the news, Jennifer Scheich from Farm Journal's Pork. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Valori.
Did you hear that free-for-all lineup?
Unbelievable. The entire show, excited. Top to bottom, yeah.
Yes, I am so excited. Number one, Recker, a leader of in farming in Iowa, and Northeast Iowa in particular.
A man who does not mince words.
No, he does not. Jim Sutter, CEO of the U.S. Soybean Export Council. Oof. And then Purdue Ag Economist Jim Mintert.
Yeah.
This is going to be really cool.
The ag barometer or ag economy barometer in January surged over December.
Yeah.
Be interesting.
How you doing, buddy?
Doing super great, brother. Good. Really good.
Good.
Not under quarantine just yet. So another day outside the bunker is a good day.
Absolutely, it is. No doubt about that. So we had the early riser session this morning, and on stage with Tyne Morgan taping the U.S. Farm Report. I was one of the panelists this morning. Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri-Marketing was one of the panelists, and Mark Gold.
Great. Oh, yeah.
And as we were up there and started to take questions from the, it felt like there was 1,000 people in the room. Mm-hmm. But as we were starting to take questions, surprise, surprise, corn basis, mm-hmm. and whether or not the corn is really out there, mm-hmm. was one of the main topics that these guys wanted to talk about this morning. Davis, we've been talking about that on AgriTalk since July.
Well, we have, and honestly, I don't know if we have a better handle on it now than we did then.
Well, we're going to find out if we do or not.
I can't wait.
So here I am at the Syngenta booth. Thank you to Syngenta for making it possible for us to bring you coverage from the Commodity Classic. Here I am setting up with John Harith at the Syngenta booth.
Would that be news overlord John Harith?
That's right. That's right.
Uh-huh.
And the expo isn't open yet. The trade show floor isn't open yet. And we're just kind of hanging out, getting ready to do the show, and up walks Lance Honig, mm-hmm. the chief of the crops branch at NAS.
Yeah.
And that's what I said. This was the topic of conversation this morning, and he said, well, I'll come on and talk about it.
Outstanding.
Yep. So this is going to be really good. Dan Huber's going to be in on that conversation with Lance. I'm really looking forward to it. Mm-hmm. And, we have got a lot of ground to cover today, buddy. Let's go ahead. What do you got in the news?
Sure thing. Well, the coronavirus downturn in the markets continues today with Asian, European, and U.S. markets lower at the start of trade. Traders are likely wary of holding positions over the weekend after last weekend's news resulted in this week's sharp sell-off. According to the Relative Strength Index, all three U.S. indices are into oversold territory and are technically in corrective territory. Meanwhile, treasuries are overbought and expensive, suggesting municipalities and state finances could become strained if the coronavirus worsens in the United States. And I don't know if it's a question of if, but rather when the coronavirus worsens in the United States. What are you hearing?
I am so sorry for that reaction, but the reason I'm reacting is because John just handed me a press release, and I was reading it while you were doing the news, Davis.
Oh, all right.
So please continue on.
Okay, China will release its most recent Purchasing Managers Index, or PMI, tomorrow, which will likely spur more selling on China's current economic struggle. When looking for analog occurrences, Chip, the severe influenza mm-hmm. outbreak in 1918 caused a 4.25% decline in productivity in the U.S. The House Financial Services Committee has sent a letter to Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell, asking for more info about the chances of a coronavirus-led recession. The central bank says it is monitoring economic activity closely here in the U.S. Hmm. Are you with us?
Yes.
Did we get you back?
Yes, I am with you. And of course, we're going to continue to monitor this very, very closely in the U.S. And any fresh blooms anywhere around the world are going to catch all kinds of attention.
Yeah. Well, reports indicate the Environmental Protection Agency is poised to dramatically reduce the number of small refinery waivers granted based on a 10th Circuit court ruling that deemed three SREs granted for the 2016 compliance year unwarranted. EPA Director Andrew Wheeler said he has no announcement to make at this time on the matter, but said, quote, we will make sure to comply with the 10th Circuit decision. We would love it if they would start handing out fewer of these SREs.
Yes, and to give you some additional news on the ethanol front, this is what John Harith just handed me today while speaking at the 2020 Commodity Classic. USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue announced the USDA will provide $100 million in competitive cost share grants for the new higher blends infrastructure incentive program to help increase the number of fuel stations and terminals across the country offering higher blends of biofuels. So that's the push to get to the
E15. And to get the infrastructure in place. Finally, here, South Carolina will hold a crucial Democratic primary on Saturday with former VP Joe Biden leading in early polls. Questions have surfaced if frontrunner Bernie Sanders will get the nod from the DNC over Vice President Biden, as some are now calling Sanders' policy too liberal to defeat President Trump. Former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg has chided Sanders over his health, challenging Sanders to take a cardiac exam after Sanders suffered a heart attack last year. Chip.
Good grief. I got a feeling that this topic is going to come up later in the conversation. All right.
Cat
thank
fight.
You, Davis.
Yep.
Let's bring in Jennifer Scheich. Jennifer is the editor of Farm Journal's Pork. She joins us right now. How you doing today, Jennifer?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing real fine, real fine. Now, earlier this week, when we talked with Annalisa Locke from Farm Journal's Milk, she was talking about the folks from Starbucks being willing to go out and tour some dairy, see where the product comes from. And then I get a message from you that they're introducing the fake meat breakfast items there at Starbucks. What's going on?
Well, starting on March 3rd, they're going to add a Beyond Meat breakfast sandwich to their menu in Canada. And apparently this is a very flavorful rosemary, fennel, and herb-flavored patty. Not really sure that sounds too great to me, but that's what's going to be added to the lineup. So...
that is crazy it's out there. I think we understand that the fake meat is not going to go away. But Jennifer, as consumers learn more and understand more about the product and what it really is, our demand for pork in this country is still outstanding, isn't it?
Oh, it is. And did you hear the great news about Dunkin' Donuts? Yesterday, they launched Snack and Bacon. So basically, they're just bagging up 4 pieces of bacon. And
seriously?
I can't wait to see what
bacon?
That costs. I haven't been in to see it.
It
is sweet black pepper bacon. And I love bacon and I love coffee. So, I mean, that may be my new place to go get my coffee now.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Last year out in California, at about this time of the year, I stopped into a shop that was selling bacon by the slice, and it was like a buck and a half a slice. I only had about a dozen. It was I tried to control myself.
It's worth everything.
That's right. Jennifer, thank you so much. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks.
You bet. That is Jennifer Scheich, the editor of Farm Journal's Pork. All right, coming up next, we've got Dan Huber and Lance Honig on AgriTalk.
2019 marks 40 years of Syngenta and its legacy company's work in seed treatment research and innovation. Ross Weichel, head of Syngenta Seed Care in North America, says a commitment to a robust pipeline is key to success for their customers. Ross joins us now. Hello, Ross. Tell me a little bit about that commitment to developing new solutions.
We've become one of the best innovators in the industry because of the resources we invest to keep our R&D engine humming. On average, we spend over 10 years and nearly $280 million to develop novel seed treatment molecules. Our current new product lineup and pipeline are truly tremendous.
Thanks, Ross. We'll hear more from Ross next week, but for more stories from Syngenta, head over to www.syngentathrive.com.
Ever walk across your cornfield and find a nice surprise? Like that favorite vice grip that fell off the planter last spring? Well, next fall you might just come upon an even bigger treasure. More corn, thanks to Acuron herbicide. Acuron gives you 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than any other herbicide when used in a pre-emergence application at full label rates. To discover your 5 to 15 bushels, talk to your Syngenta retailer. Acuron Yield Advantage range based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials. Always read and follow label instructions. Acuron is a restricted use pesticide.
A little cold weather never hurt anybody, but with typical number 2 diesel, it can do a number on your field equipment. Cenex Premium Diesel comes with a more complete additive package for a more complete burn. That's how Cenex Ruby Fieldmaster Seasonally Enhanced optimizes cold weather performance. Or stick with your fair weather friend, typical number 2. Your choice. Cenex Premium Diesel. Diesel that doesn't mess around.
Precision Planting knows you want your plants to have the most consistent emergence possible this season, because delayed emergence means yield loss. In order to do that, you need to know the cause of erratic emergence. We understand this can be difficult, which is why Precision Planting has researched over 10 million individual plants across the country to determine the causes of erratic emergence. What Precision Planting learned was that in order to achieve consistent emergence, you need to clear residue, maintain depth, eliminate compaction, sense soil moisture, firm seed, and close the furrow with no evidence the planter was ever there. How do you get all these things right during the planting pass? That's what the Precision Planting Emergence System was designed for. Contact a Precision Planting dealer today to add the Precision Planting Emergence System to your planter, or visit precisionplanting.com/emergence to learn more. Make 2020 a year that your fields have consistent emergence of every plant, leading to a high yield potential. Avoid the revenue loss and regret that comes with erratic emergence, and instead be proud of your stands.
I'm Andrew McRae, your host for Farming the Countryside. We're talking about issues, tips, and trends affecting rural and agricultural America.
Then it was a burden on the local office. Essentially, you just have Arc County right now, or PLC.
On each show, I talk with guests who provide the latest info on important topics and the challenges and successes on their own operations.
We had an open house and invited the entire community. It was a huge event. We had about 750 people show up.
The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Nutrien Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
The truth is hard to come by these days, unless you listen to AgriTalk.
The stars at night are big and bright, deep in the heart of Texas.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis back in the studio.
Hey, yo.
Yeah, thank you so much to Syngenta for making it possible for us to bring you coverage from Commodity Classic. And with that, let's have this industry spotlight. Joining us now is Travis Gustafson. He is a Syngenta Agronomic Service representative. Travis, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Okay, so here we are, Commodity Classic. Planting is right around the corner, and for some guys, it's already started. But after the terrible year that a lot of guys had to deal with last year, what are we keeping in mind as we make our final preps for 2020?
Well, I think for a lot of acres out there where we did have some prevent plant, we're not going to be able to completely fix that in 2020. It's just going to be probably a 2 to 3 year process to get those acres back into production, and we're going to have to look at it that way. So we're going to have to, you know, use some real solid pre-emerge herbicides.
Yep.
It's going to give us lots of residual and good broad spectrum with effective modes of action. So yep. We've got, you know, Acuron herbicide has four active ingredients, 3 modes of action. And we've seen some real good results with that as far as extending that residual into the growing season as far as we can.
Yeah. You got to layer up on these weeds, don't you? I mean, what are the best management practices to get these weeds under control?
Well, we have to use chemistry is going to be one tool, yeah. But tillage is going to have to be another one. Maybe some of these guys with no till that had some acres they couldn't get planted last year. maybe they're going to have to break that no-till just to get these weeds under control, unfortunately. But we are going to have to look at a lot of different practices here, chemistry being one, tillage and, you know, crop rotation and the whole works.
And everything that you do to control those weeds, you still got to give the crop its ability to go ahead and perform as the best it can. What do you recommend on corn?
For herbicides or for Acuron would be our number one go-to there. That's got a really wide geography as far as where it works. If if you've got your weeds under control, you've had good history with that field, you can step down to like a Lexar or, you know, do some of those programs. But that's kind of where we're at on our portfolio.
Where do we go to learn more, Travis?
Go talk to your Syngenta representative, and the Syngenta website would be a good place to start. Find your rep.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Travis. That is Travis Gustafson, Syngenta Agronomic Service representative. All right, let's get this conversation started. Lance, I'm going to introduce you first, but I'm going to go to Dan for the conversation first. Lance Honig, the chief of the crops branch at USDA NASS. Thanks so much for stopping by, buddy.
Hey, I really appreciate it, Chip. You know, it's nice to be able to just walk up and join you. So.
Well, it's nice to be walked up to and joined in this case, Lance, very much. We got Dan Huber from the Huber Report. It's good to see you, buddy.
Good to see you. Thanks.
Yeah. Man, what a week.
What a month.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a rough month from beginning to end. And, you know, and so much of it's stimulated by the virus outbreak and the panic and the liquidation. But, we've been through these kind of things before. So, I mean, it's not that.
Have we?
Oh, I think in varying degrees. I mean, it might not be a virus that stimulated it. But, I mean, there's been other black swan events, I guess, for lack of a better term, that have disrupted markets and, you know, basically gave us that risk off. We got to get out attitude. We always overreact when we do it, and then we'll find a balance once we kind of settle down and know where the I don't want to say where the bottom of the market is, but at least know where, you know, those circumstances are answered a little bit. And I think
where the buying interest comes back in.
Well, you know, value people are always looking for opportunities like this.
We're there in meal.
Oh, I think so. Oh, yeah, I mean, great example. I mean, meal, that turnaround the last couple of days, he said, you know, enough's enough. We've pushed it too far. So I would say the whole ag sector is probably in that category, maybe cattle a little less, but you know, the equity market, boy, well, that's another story over there, because I mean they were so overvalued, so who knows how long that lasts yet.
Before we're done talking, we're going to talk more about the livestock trade. Because boy, that is really tough. The thing that concerns me the most, Dan, is we're discovering the weakest links in the supply. You know, that's not the right way of saying it. We are discovering just how intertwined the supply chain really is. I mean, and I think we're going to learn more about it in the U.S. as we go forward and in agriculture as we go forward. Because, chemical is manufactured in the United States, but we get a lot of the product that makes that chemical out of China.
Right, somewhere.
Fertilizer. Else, The reason that we got fertilizer flowing as freely as we do in this country is because as we're using it here, we're bringing it in from China.
Yep. You know what? I think one of the things in the markets that probably was warning us months ago was the dry index, the Baltic dry index. I mean, that market had been in a free fall for months here. So, I mean, there was really nothing happening there. There were already supply chain problems, probably stimulated by the trade embargo or the trade battle.
Yep.
And, you know, that warned us for months. And I guess we really weren't paying that close of attention to it. But, boy, it certainly came home to roost when it did. So.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, one of the market factors that we have been talking about, I remember it most specifically first coming up in July of last year. I was at an event in Worthington, Minnesota. This was July of last year, and it was corn basis.
Oh, sure.
And corn basis trading as strong as it is. And Lance, this morning at the early riser session, we had roughly 1,000 people in the room. And when it got time to questions, the first one that came up is, with corn basis doing what it's doing, how can we believe that corn stocks are as plentiful as they are across the country? And in other words, how do we believe that there could be 1.9 billion bushel left over at the end of this year? The quarterly grain stocks numbers are coming into question bigger and bigger all the time.
Well, and they always do, I think. But, you know, you mentioned their quarterly grain stocks numbers, right? So we're going to get another measure of that here in just a few weeks. In fact, we're on the ground right now collecting that information. Right. Producers should have those forms in their hands. Folks will be calling them soon because we're going to measure it four times through the year and find out exactly what's out there. We did the same thing back in December. That's how we got the stocks number that we have. We went directly to the farmers. More than 80,000 farmers we reached out to, and we said, tell us how many bushels, you know, corn, soybeans, wheat, whatever it is, how many bushels do you have sitting in your bins? We did the same thing with the commercial facilities to find out what's stored off the farm. So we're getting an actual measure. We're going to do the same thing as of March the 1st, and that's what the World Board's looking at when they're forecasting those ending stocks. Right. That's one of the factors looking at.
Yeah, but Lance, they don't like it. The simple fact that a number that they don't like comes from them, they don't accept that answer.
Well, we've heard that more and more, right? Yeah. I mean, this past season, we've heard a lot of things this past season, right? But one of the things we've heard more and more is, why do you go to the farmers? Why would you? We've heard it on yields.
Yeah,
we're hearing it on stocks. But my response would be, why wouldn't you go to the farmers?
Right.
If you want to know what the corn yielded last year, who is going to know better than the farmer who harvested that crop? If you want to know how much grain is stored on the farms across the country, who's going to know better than the farmers?
Right.
And so that's why we go to the farmers, and we're doing it again.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, and like I said, every time I remind them that a NAS survey and the results that come from it are just the cumulative result of all of your answers, they kind of shrink back. And
and the other thing to think about, especially if we talk about yield, right? We can talk about acres, we can talk about yield, either one. And we do rely really heavily on what the farmers tell us, but not exclusively.
Right.
We've got other sources of information out there. But it takes time to get to some of those points. Yeah. And so if you want to talk about acres, FSA-certified acres, satellite data, yield, we've got satellite information there. We put enumerators in fields and take counts and measurements themselves. So we're not saying exactly what the farmer tells us, that's it. We've got checks and balances in there. We've got other data to help fine-tune that.
And
you know what? At the end of the season, especially when you get into crops like soybeans, cotton, peanuts, we know where those crops go.
Right.
So at the end of the day, there's checks and balances there, too, that tell you if the crop was there or not.
Yeah, so. And then the grain stocks, how quickly the crop is getting used up, it allows us to do a check on the World Board to do a check on their feed and residual numbers, for example.
Yeah, that's right. And as you get further into the season, too, more of that crop, you know, leaves the farm, shows up in these commercial facilities. Yeah. And so some of those question marks that folks have out there about, does the farmer know what's in their bin?
Right.
That starts to become a much smaller factor moving forward anyway, because it's going across the scale later on.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
You know, and I think, of course, two of the challenges that come in there, too, is one, farmers are a little bit hesitant to really put out the information. And I've said it to him many times, you know, and I think it comes back to right to what you were talking about. If you don't give good information, how do you expect to get good results? You know, so it's the old computer adage about garbage in, garbage out.
Right.
You know, if you're not going to give her the right data, don't rely on what comes there. But yeah, I mean, there is really no other good way to have a check on feed usage. I mean, that is the one thing we don't know. But I think looking ahead, you know, one of the challenges we might face as the year moves on is the quality issues.
Yeah.
And where, you know, I mean, if guys are going off of bin measurements, they might have a kind of a dramatic surprise once they empty those bins out this year. And that comes back to your basis, too. I think it's finding quality corn.
Yeah, and I got to thank Angie Setzer and Garrett Toy for opening up the whole test weight conversation on AgriTalk earlier this week.
Sure.
Yeah, it's filled up my Twitter notifications this week. No doubt about it, Lance. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Yep, always happy.
Dan, appreciate you as well.
Hey,
I just want to let everybody know we were going to have Adam Collins from Molson Coors on the show here this morning. Obviously, with the events that happened up in Milwaukee, Adam is not going to be able to join us here, but he was really looking forward to it. He wanted us to pass on his thanks.
Farm Journal Hemp College is going south. Check out the upcoming college happening March 25th in Lubbock, Texas. This one-day farmer-focused event will get you on the right production path with information on the best agronomic practices for hemp production, marketing, and legal considerations. Interact with growers and industry experts to gather answers to all your hemp questions and see if it's a good fit for you. Register for Hemp College in Texas today by visiting agweb.com/events/hemp-college.
Planting season is fast approaching. Are you confident your depth is set correctly, or are you assuming your T-handle placement is correct? From seeing thousands of planters across the country, the folks at Precision Planting have found that even when depth setting is the same across the planter, actual planting depth can vary by up to 3/4 of an inch, leading to erratic emergence row by row. A simple block check can be done to avoid this issue. Visit planterexpert.com to find a Precision Planting dealer who can help you get smarter every season and avoid row-to-row variability.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, I haven't looked for a while. I'm not exactly sure what's going on with these markets. What's happening?
Well, Chip, it's like Groundhog Day. It's just a repeat of the previous day. So I'm going to start with the positive stuff, and that's the meal market. It continues to strengthen here. So we posted new contract lows earlier in the week, but it's really rebounded. And we saw a daily export sale to the Philippines. So there's good demand underneath the market there. And that market's trying all by itself. God bless it, because everything else is still under pressure. But the meal market is trying here. So I think there's a story there, if we can get by the coronavirus fears, that's just hammering all these other markets. You know, the corn, it's not facing too much price pressure today, but it's still weaker. Soybeans, they're facing moderate pressure. And unfortunately, the wheat market is under pretty heavy pressure this morning.
Okay, now take us over to the livestock market. The last time I looked, they were feeling the heaviest of the pressure again today.
Yeah, and I'm going to go to the equity markets, because we have the Dow under heavy pressure again, the S&P is under heavy pressure again, and that's having a definite impact on livestock trade. It has all week, and it continues to. But the cattle market, sharp losses there. Hog futures, moderate to sharp losses. So just more of the same. You know, I think fear there, and everything's tied to demand, and will the coronavirus situation dry up world demand for U.S. meats? And that's really putting pressure. You know, of note, the funds, just, you know, going by price action here, but they have to be short right now, and that's a very rare position in the cattle market.
No doubt about it. Thank you, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Save time and capitalize on market opportunities with Pro Farmer's Daily Advice Monitor. Whether on your desktop or on your phone, visit tryprofarmer.com and get a generous one-month free trial. Pro Farmer only focuses on the news that impacts the market, so you won't scroll through pages of articles to find what's really impacting your business. Plus, get full access to cash bids, charting tools, and more. Visit tryprofarmer.com right now. That's tryprofarmer.com.
To protect his home and family from disaster, Steve used courage, wisdom, and his camera phone.
That should do it.
Way to go, Steve! By simply taking digital pictures of his family's important documents, Steve can always have them stored safely online, no matter when disaster strikes. Learn other simple ways to protect your home and family before a natural disaster at ready.gov. That's ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture. It's brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. I'm your host, Chip Flory. I am in the Syngenta booth at Commodity Classic down in San Antonio, Texas. Thanks for joining us today, and thanks to Syngenta for making it possible for us to bring you coverage and this industry spotlight. All right, joining us now is Kevin Scholl. Kevin, after the growing season that we had a year ago, in many cases, at the end of the season, when guys were really doing the evaluation, it was that fungicide that really helped them out. It's just the return on that product, on Miravis Ace, or Miravis Neo, is really something to behold, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Looking back at 2019, we were set up for a pretty heavy disease year.
Yep.
Then July hit, we got dry, and things kind of slowed down a little bit, but once we got into August and later in the growing season, we had a lot of late planted corn out there. And so the disease inoculum built back up again. And if you sprayed, you got some good returns.
Yeah. And if it was a problem last year, odds are it's going to be a problem this year.
Yeah, we've got a lot of inoculum out there in the field. We're gonna, if the conditions are right, it's gonna build again.
So what do we want to? How does Miravis Neo work?
So Miravis Neo has got three different active ingredients in there, and so it goes across triazoles, strobilurin, and SDHI. So you got both the killing power. If the disease is out there, it kills what's there, and then also it's got two active ingredients there that gives you preventative. So and with the SDHI, that gives us a really long preventative.
Yep. Okay. So for a soybean grower, what are they looking to control with Miravis Neo?
Basically, all those, the leaf diseases, okay. And I think the big one that Miravis Neo brings to the table is suppression on white mold. A lot of guys are looking for that disease to be able to be controlled, and this is a good product to be able to put up against that.
Okay, now move it over to a cornfield.
So, the same thing, we've got a lot of the, tar spot is a... Yeah. That's a one that's getting
a lot of headlines.
We still
don't know how much damage that stuff can do.
Right, yeah. And we've, like I said, we were set up for another big year in Northern Illinois where I cover, but we still had a lot of it there. But beyond tar spot, the gray leaf spot and northern corn leaf blight are two diseases that we do a very good job on also.
Very good, very good. Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you.
All right, that is Kevin Scholl from Syngenta. Again, thank you to Syngenta for making it possible for us to bring you coverage from the Commodity Classic. All right, we're going to get the conversation started right now. I'm going to introduce first Tim Recker, Iowa farmer. How you doing this morning, Tim?
I'm doing great.
You look great.
Feeling comfortable. Had a great night celebrating Kevin Ross, National President of Corn Growers.
Right.
Just a great event.
Yeah, it sounded like it was really good. No question about that. And we've got Dr. Jim Minturn from Purdue University. How are you this morning?
I'm great, and it's a pleasure to be here.
That's awesome. I'm glad that you can make it by here. And just sitting down is Jim Sutter. He is the CEO of the U.S. Soybean Export Council. Jim, it's good to see you again.
Nice to see you, Chip. Thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, Tim, you know your job. Jump in. Join in on the conversation as we go here, but I want to start with the barometer, if I could. And Jim, we're gonna be talking a lot about export potential here. But where do we stand right now? Here's my situation, Jim. I've been out on the road winter meetings. When the winter meetings started, I felt like everybody was really in a pretty good mood, still being very optimistic. I get towards the end of the season, and the optimism is draining out of it. What are you picking up in the barometer?
So at the moment, our most recent barometer that we have publicly available is from January. That survey was conducted in mid-January, and it matches exactly what you just said. In other words, people were actually record high optimism, overall sentiment, the highest number we've had since we've been collecting data in the fall of 2015. The big jump from December to January appeared to be related to trade. We were collecting data just about the same time that President Trump signed the Phase 1 agreement. Also, the USMCA agreement was signed at that time. And people were very optimistic about the future. And that really drove the big jump in the barometer that took place from December to January. So people more optimistic about the future. And it clearly was tied to trade. We've been asking a couple of questions about the China trade situation going back to last March. And we were at one of the highest levels we've ever had in terms of people expecting the trade dispute to be resolved quickly and also being optimistic that it ultimately be resolved in a way that was beneficial to U.S. agriculture. And so, those two things, I think, come together. And so we're getting ready to release the February barometer. That'll come out this coming Tuesday. I have to caution you, though, we collected data the week of February 10 through 14.
Okay, middle of the month.
And if you're thinking about your calendar and when the whole China situation with coronavirus broke loose, people knew about it then, but we hadn't seen this big reaction in the markets yet.
Right.
So we're in the process of actually finalizing that data analysis right now and wrap it up here over the weekend. But I wouldn't be surprised if we retain a lot of that optimism that we had in January because of when we collected
the timing
the data.
Of everything.
And the next data collection point for us will be the week of March 16. And I guess that'll be interesting because that'll give us a chance to see how things sort out between now and then. Maybe things, we're kind of in a crisis mode right now. We need a little time for this to sort out and really figure out what those impacts are on all the markets.
Dr. Minter, Davis Michelson here back at the home office. I was looking over your Ag Economy Barometer, and I also noticed one of the questions that you asked is to estimate what's a reasonable annual growth rate for farmers over the next 5 years. And the farms that either have no plans to grow or plan to exit or retire was a pretty sizable number compared to history. So how does that balance with that rise in the future expectations?
I think you're really measuring two different things there. Although, if you look at the data collection point, and let me back up for a second.
Yeah.
So we've been collecting, asking that question every winter since we started the barometer in 2015. And we always get a sizable number of people that say they either have no plans to grow or plan to exit or retire. And I think that's reflective of the average age of farmers in the U.S., to be honest with you. What we did see, though, is a little bit of a trend up the last couple of years with respect to the number of the people that said no plans to grow.
Right.
And our hypothesis, and it's really kind of a cross between a hypothesis and a guess, is that that might be a reflection or a reaction to the level of uncertainty and the level of risk that we're experiencing out there. Because one of the ways you manage risk is to be a little more conservative, try and conserve working capital, not step out a line too much in terms of expansion opportunities. Even those opportunities might be there. You might be a little concerned about doing it. Right. I think we're picking a little of that up.
Okay. One of the reasons I think the farmers are starting to lose some of the optimism, Wrecker, is just because the lack of a positive market reaction to the good trade news.
That's exactly. We finished last year under some real negative conditions. We've talked about them. We don't need to revisit it. But we were so so excited about trade agreements, about China Phase 1, about USMCA. Everything was in line. And what have we seen? Erosion of markets.
Right.
But basis is good. So that's been a positive. But we have had the perfect storm come together in this last month. We have seen coronavirus that just took over, come out of nowhere. You want to call it the Black Swan event.
Yep.
We have a Democrat, a socialist that's running the Democrat ticket. There's uncertainty in the market.
Absolutely.
Markets do not like uncertainty.
That's right. That's right. So give us some certainty here, Jim. When we talk about that phase one agreement, the soybean market is going to be looking at that. Should we be optimistic about phase one?
Well, Chip, I think we should be optimistic. I think there was kind of, you know, and these things always happen, but I think there was a little bit too much hype that something would happen right away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because when China entered into the phase one agreement, they didn't remove their tariffs.
Right.
So they just said they're going to make these purchases.
Right.
So we said all along, well, something's going to need to happen to make it possible for the importers to buy with these tariffs in place.
Right.
Well, just last week, we saw China announce inside China a mechanism where importers can go and apply for a tariff waiver to be able to make imports and get relief from the tariffs.
Right.
Which is great.
Yes.
We needed to see that happen.
Right.
Those applications can be submitted starting on March 2nd. So it'll take a little time for those to work through the system, and those are for all U.S. ag products, not just soybeans, but obviously we're watching the soybean part of that.
Right.
So I think that was a really important step that we needed to see China make. So that was good that they did that.
Yep.
The other thing we have to realize is this is not the normal time of year when the U.S. would be shipping a lot of soybeans to China.
That's right.
We'd like to be, but Brazil's harvesting a big crop, a record crop, and Brazil's pushing soybeans out. We haven't talked about the value of the dollar relative to the value of the Brazilian real.
That's I was going to get there with Jim.
That's another story.
Yep.
So the Brazil's pushing soybeans out. I think that China, you know, I happened to be in China the day after the phase one agreement was signed. Just by dumb luck, I was just there for a planned meeting.
Okay.
And I had the opportunity to meet with a lot of importers. And they were all very excited and looking forward to being able to be importing. But they said, we're going to have to understand how this mechanism is going to work. So I think there is still every intent to live up to the agreement. It's going to make a significant increase in U.S. ag exports to China if it's fulfilled, and I think China will try their darndest to fulfill this. So I think we just need to be a little patient.
Don't you think the next, I mean, even the next week, even with coronavirus still being an issue, because they can start to ask for those waivers on the the tariffs, this next week is going to tell us so much about what might be happening the rest of this year.
Well, I mean, it'll be important. I don't know how quickly the Chinese system, I mean, the applications can be filed on April or March 2nd. I don't know how quickly they plan to turn those around.
Okay.
But it will be important to hear what we're hearing from people.
Yeah.
And I think how they continue to deal with this coronavirus situation is also another important situation.
Okay. All right. Now, when we come back, I want to build a little more optimism into this, okay? Because I want to talk about market development in Asia.
Great.
I talk about it a lot on AgriTalk, but I don't feel like we can talk about it enough. And then I want to get to the dollar question. And then, Wrecker, maybe we'll refill the glass. We are live at the Commodity Classic in San Antonio. Thank you to Sanjana. We'll be back in a moment.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is the best of tractor tales as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This 2-DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, the best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
Farm Journal Hemp College is going south. Check out the upcoming college happening March 25th in Lubbock, Texas. This one-day farmer-focused event will get you on the right production path with information on the best agronomic practices for hemp production, marketing, and legal considerations. Interact with growers and industry experts to gather answers to all your hemp questions and see if it's a good fit for you. Register for Hemp College in Texas today by visiting agweb.com/events/hemp-college.
I'm Zach Johnson, a row crop farmer in Minnesota.
And I'm Mitchell Hora, a farmer in Iowa.
Agriculture has to feed a growing population, and many people want us to pull that off without messing up the environment. So how do we do that?
We're trying to figure that out on our podcast, Fieldwork. Check us out on the AgriTalk app and learn more at fieldworktalk.org.
Hey, AgriTalk listeners, this is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady inviting you to get more insight on today's market movers with Pro Farmer. When you visit profarmer.com/radio, we'll give you 1 month of premium analysis and advice absolutely free. You'll get the perfect blend of the marketing and policy information you need for your farming operation without feeling overwhelmed. Plus, we'll text you when breaking market advice is issued so you never miss a marketing opportunity. Visit profarmer.com/radio today. That's profarmer.com/radio.
I can't believe what I'm seeing.
You mean how green that cornfield is?
No, I'm talking about the corn stalk that just walked across the road.
Yeah, but that mirror of his Neo worked great. You know what they say, greener fields, higher yields.
I hear you, but a walking corn stalk is still pretty crazy.
Can't blame it for choosing greener, healthier mirror of his Neo fields.
True. Still crazy, though.
Miravis Neo Fungicide. With improved disease control and increased plant health, it delivers a difference even corn can see. Learn more at SyngentaUS.com/MiravisNeo. Always read and follow label instructions.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
Protect diesel engines with premium Senex lubricants. Choose SuperLube TMS, a conventional heavy-duty diesel engine oil engineered to deliver protection for new, current, and older diesel engines. SuperLube TMS protects against soot, prevents sludge deposits, and slows oil thickening. The power needed to weather long hours and heavy, dusty road conditions. The power of Senex lubricants keeps engines running like a well-oiled machine.
Senex is a brand of CHS.
Precision Planting knows you want your plants to have the most consistent emergence possible this season because delayed emergence means yield loss. In order to do that, you need to know the cause of erratic emergence. We understand this can be difficult, which is why Precision Planting has researched over 10 million individual plants across the country to determine the causes of erratic emergence. What Precision Planting learned was that in order to achieve consistent emergence, you need to clear residue, maintain depth, eliminate compaction, sense soil moisture, firm seed, and close the furrow with no evidence the planter was ever there. How do you get all these things right during the planting pass? That's what the Precision Planting Emergent System was designed for. Contact a Precision Planting dealer today to add the Precision Planting Emergent System to your planter, or visit precisionplanting.com/emergence to learn more. Make 2020 a year that your fields have consistent emergence of every plant, leading to a high yield potential. Avoid the revenue loss and regret that comes with erratic emergence, and instead be proud of your stands.
Sweet strawberry icing.
You're in Goodwill and just past that vintage denim jacket, you spot miniature donut earrings. You lean in. Ah, that's the scent of shopping success. Because at Goodwill, every item you buy funds local job training and more. So bring home those donut earrings and bring home so much good to your community. Goodwill. Bring good home. Brought to you by Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Our name says it all. AgriTalk. What more do you need to know?
In Texas, I'm going.
All right, welcome back to San Antonio and the 2020 Commodity Classic. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Thank you so much for joining us today. Davis is back in the studio, and we got a free-for-all Yeehaw. Going here at Commodity Classic. Jim Sutter from the USEC, U.S. Soybean Export Council. Jim Mintert, Purdue University ag economist, and Iowa farmer Tim Recker is with us. Okay, so let's talk about that Asian market development. And I've said this a couple of times during the meeting season, because it's one of the things that I do during a meeting, Jim. I'll talk about how the expansion of the middle class in Asia is creating demand quicker than anybody realizes. And then I stop and I pause and I wait for everybody in the room to roll their eyes because they've been hearing it for the last 10, 12 years.
Right.
The fact of the matter is it's happening.
It is happening. Let me give you a few examples.
Yes.
Let me talk about Egypt, a country that just is so so exciting to me, because few years ago, they were not really on the import screen in terms of U.S. soy imports.
Right.
Last year, they were our number three export market.
Right.
This year, they'll take 3 million tons of U.S. soybeans.
And maybe a little more than that.
And maybe even a little more than that. And they have a strong preference for U.S. soy. But why are they importing it? This is because of basic demand for poultry and for fish in that country.
Yeah.
And they're just, as their economy is improving, they're wanting to consume more protein, wanting to consume more meat, and they have to have a source of protein to be able to grow these things.
Right.
There's a big crushing industry that has grown up there, and they like to bring in U.S. soybeans.
That's
similarly,
they like to bring in U.S. ethanol, too.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
So, yeah.
Not too far from those countries. If you move over a little bit to the towards Asia, you get into Pakistan and Bangladesh, places we don't think of often as important markets. Pakistan was in the top 10 last year. Bangladesh was number 13. Both of those are growing rapidly.
Nice.
I think that they will continue to grow. I think we'll see Pakistan will take 1.5 million, maybe 2 million tons of U.S. soybeans this year. Bangladesh is already over 1 million tons of soybeans year to date since the 1st of September.
Okay.
And again, it's growing poultry markets in their country.
Okay, now I hope the people out there don't think that, well, yeah, it's because we got our number one market stepped on that we're out there developing all these other markets. This is stuff that's been in development for years.
Absolutely. We've been doing this, has been part of our program for years.
Yeah, it's not just because of the battles with China.
I mean, this takes a long time.
Yeah.
I think it's a great reminder for people to think about the work in China that U.S. soybean farmers and the U.S. government through FAS have been investing in. It's gone on for 40 years.
Yeah, this kind of development work, it's got to happen.
And that, and the corn and soybean growers, that's been our key point. We've been told for 20 years, this is what we've been looking at, this demand, this pent-up demand that we're going to fill. And that's why there was such optimism up when this trade agreements were signed. And that's why the Iowa farmer was just like excited, ready to go. We're hearing news that you're going to get bigger planters, you got to get bigger tractors. we know we can grow the crop great. Yeah. We just need the market and the road is being set for us.
And you got to have the financial incentive. You got to be able to make some money. That's part, that in the sustainability equation, that is entry number one for me, profitability.
Profitability. Whatever we do out here, it's got to all go back to profitability.
Absolutely. So all these trade markets are developing, and here we are with a dollar that is making it difficult for us to open up some opportunities out there, Jim.
Well, and I think one of the issues right now is, you know, we're the reserve currency for the world. In an environment of fear, capital flies to the most stable environment, and that's the U.S. That's, you know, as that capital comes in, that's putting pressure, downward pressure on U.S. interest rates, and that puts upward pressure on the dollar.
All-time low in the 10-year.
Yeah, and that, so that's not going to resolve itself real quickly. But, you know, from a longer-term standpoint, I think the issues Jim was bringing up are really key. You know, if you think about what's driving demand around the world, it's consumer incomes going up around the world, especially in places like Asia and the Middle East. As those consumer incomes go up, those folks want to have a better diet. A better diet always means more animal protein and more fish protein. That's what drives demand from a long-term perspective. And it's also why the U.S. has an very strong vested interest in seeing other countries do well.
Yeah.
It's important to us. It's important to U.S. agriculture. It's important to all of the U.S. economy, but it's especially important to U.S. agriculture.
Yeah, that's right.
Farmers actually welcome the perfect storm. This is an opportunity. This is an opportunity for us.
Yep. Why?
Great time to for us as farmers. We have the technology. We have to be able to do. Look what we did last year. Mm-hmm. Record crop in the most
tough conditions. Yep.
Farmers welcome the challenge, and we'll do it.
They really do. Yep. Absolutely. And it's pretty amazing how we rise up and meet that challenge on a regular basis. You hear about the technology treadmill, and I wonder if we're not on a production treadmill where you've got to have that disruption in supply because of a weather problem or a crop problem someplace around the world before we get another opportunity to really get some good prices off. Right, Jim?
And, you know, when I tell farmers, when I do programs, you know, one of the things I talk about is the fact that we went through a period from about 2007 to 2013 where we had a huge demand shock, and that created the most profitable environment we'd ever had in crop agriculture. We're not likely to see that repeated in the near term. In fact, you know, our view is that we're probably more of a base building, a plateau kind of a period.
Yep.
We need to figure out how to go back and make money in that kind of environment. And at some point in the future, we will get another shock.
Exactly.
It's hard to predict when.
See, I think what Jim is talking about is we're going to be cutting up the demand bears with paper cuts. One little slice here, one little slice there.
That's right.
And before you know it, we've slayed the bear. And this market can start to turn around and move to the upside. The question is, when do we bottom out the demand? Well, here's the opportunity. You know, it's when the challenge is the toughest is when you still got to find the guts to go out there and put a crop in the ground and decide that you're going to do everything that you can to grow every bushel possible, that the rest of the world finally takes notice and says, you know, I can depend on them to provide us with the product that we need. And then all of a sudden you're a reliable supplier and off we go. Then we just need to get that dollar down a little bit and get competitive.
Well, I think the thing for agriculture to remember right now is that what's taking place with the coronavirus is not just about ag. It's about the economic environment across the board. And we're just one part of that. We need to resolve that.
Yep.
That creates the opportunity for things to go back.
Jim, thank you so much. Appreciate it, Jim. Thank you to you, Tim. Good conversation today. Come back this afternoon. We'll be live from Commodity Classic.
At Brandt, we're once again breaking ground on groundbreaking technology. It's called EnzUp, and it's a revolutionary product featuring new enzyme that helps prime the soil for success at planting by boosting enzyme activity and creating a rich environment around the seed. This function helps plants emerge quickly and come out strong, which gives the crop its best chance to face what Mother Nature has in store and can increase yield up to 15%. So, don't break ground this season without the groundbreaking technology of EnzUp enzymes by Brandt. Find EnzUp at Brandt.co.
Save time and capitalize on market opportunities with Pro Farmer's Daily Advice Monitor. Whether on your desktop or on your phone, visit tryprofarmer.com and get a generous one-month free trial. Pro Farmer only focuses on the news that impacts the market, so you won't scroll through pages of articles to find what's really impacting your business. Plus, get full access to cash bids, charting tools, and more. Visit tryprofarmer.com right now. That's tryprofarmer.com.
Thanks to Syngenta for sponsoring this AgriTalk podcast. For more news on Syngenta and the trends driving the industry, head to syngentathrive.com.